Wow. Hello, hello, hello. How's everyone doing? That's pretty good. How are the rest of y'all doing? Doing good? All right, there we go. Hey, first and foremost, thank you all very, very much for being here. Amazing event. Absolutely amazing event. Okay, first and foremost, this is crazy. Mark is right. I haven't trained in front of a lot of people like this in a while. Wow. I've done a lot of regionals, but this is a large group. So I got a little nervous. Little butterflies going on in here right now. Right in here? Kind of feels like they're mating. It's weird, actually. It's like, stop that. Stop that. No, we're all good. All good. What a great day. What an absolutely outstanding day. I knew this was going to be a great event when Yvette and Dave got up and Yvette said Super Bowl. I was like, oh, it was on. And from that point on, you know, Mark really set it up very, very well. What Dave Watson touched on today was exactly what I needed to hear, just talking about creating momentum and how momentum can shift from market to market. Matt Morris, you are unbelievable, Matt. Wow. I've heard you speak many times, but that was... And then Bethany Webster. Yeah, we are not worthy. Yes. That was excellent. Just phenomenal. And you know what? And here's the thing. I'm reminded as to why I come to these events. I mean, this is what, probably about the 30th large-scale event that I've been to. Start looking at the accelerations and the, you know, the conventions and Journey and the View and all of that. And, you know, it's funny because when we're out promoting these events, and I'm sure some of you have dealt with this, you know, you've been to many events and you're like, okay, you're telling your whole team, we got to go to this event. We got to go to this. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. And in the back of your mind, you're like, I'm going to another event. Oh, my word. But here's the thing. I'm not the only one, right? Come on now, okay? But here's the thing. It's that I'm always reminded that I get what I need at this event, at these events. And I think Dr. Peach said it last night, people make big decisions at big events. That is true. I'm telling you right now, fight. Do everything you can to get as many people on your team to these large events. Yes, the regionals and absolutely these events. Because if I'm making a big decision, and I've been in the business for 5 years, imagine how the brand new person that just got started, whose eyes are this big, just wide open, imagine how they're going to feel. Okay, these events are critical. So I just want to sort of pay my homage to these events. And what I'm going to talk about today, I'm talking about a couple of things, but really it's about obviously on momentum, but it's about being able to leverage others' momentum, other people's momentum, other teams' momentum. And it's a really interesting concept because I think that what's cool about this business is it's actually kind of simple. I don't think it's always easy, but I think it's a pretty simple system. And if we can have the hoodicky there. Okay, so, leveraging others' momentum. Now, the reason I put up this slide about of a race car, it's because here's the thing. Leveraging others' momentums, other people's, individuals, other teams, and now we can leverage other countries, and it's pretty significant. But I put this up because there's a thing in racing called drafting. And maybe you're familiar with this or not, but drafting. It kind of implies where there's a car, the lead car there, is setting the pace for all the other cars behind it. But all the other cars behind that lead car, so there's the car behind the second car, then the third car, and the fourth car, they're all drafting in a line. So they're basically pulling off of the momentum of the lead car. Now, there's two types of drafting. There's competitive drafting, which frankly, this is probably what that is, okay? Where competitive drafting, the first car is the one that's leading the way, has dealing with the most resistance. The second car is basically they can do what's called a slingshot. So basically, when the car is behind the second car, let me see if I can get this right. The second car is behind the first car. It's actually spending less energy. Okay, that's the key. And I want you to get this. It's spending less energy. So let's say Don Morton or Jeff and Troy or you Lois, they're out building a new market. They've got that market cranking. You're coming into the business. Maybe you're brand new. Maybe you've been in the business for a while. They've got the stories. They've got a lot of the momentum that's happening. It's actually, you don't have to go out and create all new events. You can build off of the ones that already exist. Okay? That's a huge, huge concept, and it's a simple concept, but here's the cool thing. That's competitive. I don't think we are competitive in this business, but really, we're cooperative. It's called cooperative drafting. Now, cooperative drafting is like this. A lot of bikers will use it, or cyclists. And basically what happens here is they'll take turns taking the lead, okay? So if you've got five bikers, the one up in the very, very top left-hand corner of your screen there is leading the way. Well, the person in the back is making a run to go to the front. Not so he can beat the person in the front, but they're taking turns leading. They're taking turns with it. And it just makes the job easier for everyone and in the back. And then we've got birds do it. It happens all over the place. So I want to kind of give you some visuals so you understand how simple and natural this really is. And let me just kind of talk about some of the ways in which you can leverage the momentum of other people. Now, obviously, the first thing is you want to be around the leaders. Again, they've got the stories. They've got the success. And I think this is very, very simple. I think the primary one is this. You can leverage all the work that they're already doing. You don't have to create conference calls. You don't have to create webinars. You don't have to create trainings. You don't even necessarily have to go out and create large meetings. Chances are it's already being done. Now, how can you add value to that? Because this is what I suggest. Add value. And this is a concept that I actually learned and originally heard from Dave and Yvette. I think it's brilliant. I never understood this, but now I got it. It's about adding value. It's about what can you contribute to other people. So instead of going to an event, let's say Dr. Peach has an event going on, instead of going there seeking to take from it, go there seeking to add to it. Okay, now, how can you do that? It's real simple. Maybe you can help set up. Maybe you can help check in. Maybe you can, you know, take photographs. Maybe you can help break down, whatever. If they don't need help, they don't need help, but use the event. And it's not about, as it says here, it's not about getting the leaders to do your event at all, really, because they probably don't have time. It's more just about building on their own, on what they've already got. Now, the bottom of the screen, it says tell their stories. This is what I really want to get to, because I think this is the most important thing. If you actually take today, okay? Dave and Yvette got up, told a story. Mark got up, he shared a story. Dave Watson, Matt Morris, and Bethany all told stories. Facts tell, but stories sell. And this is an easily overlooked concept, but I'm telling you, it's huge. Because we're doing it all the time. We're doing it right now. We've done it with Bethany today. We've been doing it all along. But I can tell Bethany's story. So we've all got those DVDs, the Just Push Play DVD. It's really good. It's a great DVD. It's changing the way people in this company are doing the business. So if I get that DVD, what I can do is Bethany's on there, Dr. Peach is on there, Carrie, Carlos, a whole bunch of us. But I know Bethany. I can push play, but I can tell her story. I can do it with conviction. All of you can now do this with total conviction because you've seen her. You've seen what she's about. You've seen her passion. You've heard her share directly. You've heard her struggle, okay? And you've seen the prize. You've seen what she's gained from this. Facts tell, stories sell. Most people are not really moved by the facts of the company. Oh, the company's done, you know, blah, 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 amount in revenue. We've got, you know, tens of thousands of customers and reps in 16 countries outside the United States. All that's great. But that kind of hits people up here. I believe that what really truly moves people in a significant way is what hits them here. It's what hits them here and here. This is where we look to affect people because this is temporary. Moving people up from their brain is temporary. This is more lasting. That's why this event is very, very powerful. That's why Peach said people make big decisions at big events because they get emotional. Okay, and you see the vision. Now, I'm going to talk about some stories, and here's the thing. You've all got a story. I don't care if you've been in the business for one day.
I don't care if you're the first, if you are the only person in your team, you have a story. And chances are, it's probably going to be a pretty compelling story. That's funny because I get asked to share my story a lot. And I'm like, I feel kind of weird about it. Because like, well, share your story. And I remember Steve Little sat me down one day and he goes, look, you don't understand. You have a compelling story. You need to share that because that story tells other people that they can do it too. And when I heard Bethany sharing today, I'm sitting down there, second round, I'm just going, man, it's taking tons of notes. And I just start believing even more. These events are designed to build belief. Belief in the industry, belief in World Ventures, and most importantly, belief in yourself. That's the deal. And everybody that's come up here today has talked about it. Every single one of them. And it's a process. And I want to touch on something. Byron talks about the dream, the struggle, and the prize. And Bethany did an unbelievable talk about the dream, the struggle, and the prize today. And I just want to make one little distinction. Not changing it, just making a distinction. I know Byron already means this, but I just want to say it's the dream, the struggle, and the prizes. The prizes. Because there are a lot. And here's the thing. People come into this business, they see the opportunity, they're driving home and they're fired up and they're excited and they can't even sleep the first night because they're thinking of all the people they know. They're seeing the vision. They feel it. They believe. They actually believe. This has happened for probably many of you. So you're driving home, but here's the thing. You have a dream. I want to get this. I want to get the house. I want to get the car. I want to make $50,000 a month, $100,000, whatever. Steve Little, nothing. I'm going to knock him out. Whatever it is, okay? Peach, there you go. You've got the dream. But here's the interesting thing. I've seen a lot of people quit this business. A lot. Because they didn't give it enough time. And they didn't recognize that they were getting prizes all along the way. The prize may look different than the dream. And what I mean by this is, maybe it's not all about the car. Maybe it's not all about the house. Maybe the dream takes a while to actually fully be realized. But don't forget, you're picking up prizes all along the way. Now, I'm going to tell a story, and many of you have seen this already, some of this stuff, but I'm just going to kind of share my story. I'm going to start more like today and then kind of go backwards. This is where I used to work, and I've been in this business for 5 years. I was introduced by Carrie and Leisha Schneider. We started the business in Los Angeles along with the Ulloas, and it was hot, man. It was on, big time, and we had a lot of success out of the gates, and we didn't really know what we were doing. And Bethany touched on this. Ignorance on fire is better than knowledge on ice. We didn't know what we were doing, but we were enthusiastic. When we got started, there were no dream trips. It was a concept. It was conceptual. We were like, man, if they actually have these dream trips, this thing is going to rock. It's going to be amazing. Okay. But people joined anyway because they believed our vision. They caught on our enthusiasm. So, at the time, I was working here, a place called Capo in Los Angeles, one of the top 5 restaurants in the city, unbelievable restaurant, fine dining, 16 tables, yada, yada, yada. Here's the thing. I worked there, but I couldn't afford to eat there. That bothered me. Because every day at 5:15, I would sit here on the back steps, on these greasy, grimy steps, and I would sit there, and I would just start talking to myself. Really, I was just kind of saying a prayer, saying a mantra, just talking to the universe, talking to whatever could hear me, just going, look, I got to get out of here. I got to find a better way. Because in my gut, I knew there was something else I could do. In my heart, I knew there was more I could do. I just didn't know what it was going to look like. I didn't know how it was going to unfold. Long story short, we start building the business. Things start happening. And at the time, I was actually living here in this one-room apartment above this garage, which was my alarm clock. And I'll, basically 7:15 every day, the alarm clock was this. That was the garage door opening. The very nice BMW that wasn't mine pulled out. That was my neighbor Blake, pulls out. That's the door closing. At least twice a day I dealt with that, okay? Now, just so we're clear, oh, this is my big disclaimer. All the garbage, if you can see to the little, on the building, that was not my garbage, okay? That was, the house was being done next door. But I lived there. Jamie Young actually helped me move out of this place. One room, paying $1,300 a month to live in that one room, okay? And wound up basically, you know, building the business and, you know, lived there for a long time while building the business. Wound up moving out of there into this house, a great house. Many of you have been there. Troy Brown did the very first presentation in the living room. Dr. Peach did the second presentation just about. Had over 220 people at the house to see Dr. Peach. It was insane. I don't ever recommend that. I lost a lot of hair that day. And then this is the back of the house. And here's the thing. Okay, now, I want to clarify a couple things. One, the story has gone around that I bought Tina Turner's house. I actually didn't buy it. I leased it, did a lease option on it, wound up not buying it. Smartest move I've ever done. But here's the thing. I spent a fortune on that house. A fortune. I'll be very frank with you. In terms of the lease and filling it up, I spent over $250,000 in 1 year on that house. Lived there for 1 year. 1 year. Spent less than 100 nights in that thing. Mark Seta last night talked about, hey, when you start making money, you go out and spend tons of it. Yeah, that was me. Right over here. I grew up not having money. Started making it and was like, woohoo! Great lesson. I thought I needed that house in order to build the business. I thought I needed that house in order to have a better story. I thought I needed, in a deeper level, I thought I needed that house. Here's a weird one. To be worthy isn't about the stupid house. Moved out of there, live in a gorgeous loft in Marina Del Rey now. Love it. Love it. And it's small and it's nice. Some of you have been there. I've learned that keeping it simple is really smart. Some of you have heard the story of, yeah, I drove a car, I had to roll the window down and reach out with two hands. There you go. Toyota Corolla. That's what it is. And wound up, hated that car, I got to tell you. Hated that car. But, you know, I was like, I would drive the car like, I'm so grateful I have this car. I'm so grateful I have a car. But here's the interesting thing. I was making payments on that car. Yeah. Started building the business. You get a car bonus. Wound up, this is the car that I drive now. It's a great car, you know. So here's the thing. Very, very straightforward. I don't, you know, I'm not a big fan. I'm not sitting here showing you all this stuff to try to impress you. Please hear that. I'm not showing you this to try to impress you. I'm showing it to you for a couple reasons. One, it's to impress upon you. This is the real deal. I was making $3,000 a month if I was lucky as a waiter. Now I earn a $3,000 house bonus. Okay? Things can change. This absolutely can happen. It can work for you. And it has not been easy all the time. I'm going to talk about the struggle in just a moment. But I show you this so that, because some of you are driven by this. Some of you are moved and motivated by this, and that's great. But I'm going to be very clear with you. This doesn't move me anymore. It really doesn't. I drive it because I think it's an awesome car and I love cars and it's great to have, and it certainly makes people go, what do you do? But I don't drive it because it makes me who I am. That's not what's going on, okay? Now, I put this up here because this is a quote that I tell you, I have been living by this thing, and I don't know, you probably can't see it, but the quote says, each one of us that travels further than the obstacles will know a different kind of life from that moment on. Okay? Each one of us who travels further than the obstacles will know a different kind of life from that moment on. So, hey, Monica, can you just take this off? And just, we don't need this anymore. So I want to kind of tell you more of a story. And I'm going to go back, and I'm going to tell you, because you talk about the dream, the struggle, and the prizes. Okay? I've told this story, I think, a total of 3 times. And I don't tell it often, obviously, just because it's very meaningful to me. Last time I told it, I think it was in New Jersey at a regional. And it's a story kind of my life. It's a story of an experience that happened for me. And I'm telling this story because it specifically applies to lessons that I've now applied in this business. And remember, each of you have stories in your life that you can apply to this. I'm going to suggest that you already know exactly how to do this business. You already know exactly how to succeed because you've already done it in other things. But let me explain. I'm adopted, okay? I was adopted, placed for adoption at birth. And I'm half black, half Italian. Birth mother was Italian, father was black. And people are always, you know, growing up, people still do. They're always like, excuse me, what are you? You're laughing because you were wondering it too. That's cool, great. And I'm like, I'm an octopus. What do you know? What do you mean, what am I? I'm half black, half Italian. And I was adopted by an all-white family. We grew up on the outskirts of, literally on the border of a very nice neighborhood and a very bad neighborhood. And we were, grew up middle class, kind of like lower middle class, went to a private school, was on financial aid. I went to school with many of the kids in the school were actually their parents literally owned square blocks of downtown Baltimore. They owned high rises. It was a very, very weird thing growing up. And I dealt with a lot of racism. I grew up and I had great parents. Great parents. But I grew up dealing with racism from as far back as I can remember. Literally, like kindergarten, preschool. Being told that this, the color of my skin, was not good. Being called, you know, the N-word very young. Not even knowing what the heck it meant. But intuiting that whatever it wasn't good. And so my belief system was built that this... not good, which meant me, I, not good. So what I did was I grew up in survival mode, constantly surviving. And surviving is, it's just getting by. It's just doing just enough to stay alive. That's kind of how I was when I first started hearing about this idea. That's where I was. That's where probably a lot of people are or were. And so I started learning. I learned very, very quickly how I tried to be other people. I grew up with a guy named Charlie Constable. I'm actually writing a story about this. It's called working title is Being Charlie Constable. I wanted to be this dude. I wanted to be Charlie. He was white. He got all the girls. He was cool. Everybody loved him. No problems, wealthy family, wealthy, insanely wealthy family. He drove a Mercedes. It's ridiculous. I wanted to be him. And I swear on my life, I literally thought if I could just be him, I'd be okay. And the more I tried to be him, the more I lost me. And here's an interesting thing, because I came into this business. And until even relatively recently, I would try to emulate people, but I would catch myself almost trying to be other people. Some of you think you've got to, maybe you don't. Maybe some of you think you've got to be like just like Peach. And I'm not, you know, Peach is Peach. Ain't nobody going to be like him. Nobody's going to be him. No one's going to be Bethany. You know why he's so good? You know why Bethany is so good? You know why Dave and Yvette are so good? Because they're real. They're authentic. They are themselves. Model the way they do the business. Model aspects of their lives, but be you. Be yourself. Because here's the thing. I did this business for a lot of years, not really being me. Kind of playing a game. And it caught up with me. And I completely burned out. Completely fried myself. And it's been a process of like slowing down and coming back and just being me. The reason I did, you know, the presentation on the DVD the way I did it is because I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to be me. I'm just going to take it or leave it. So here's the thing that I want to convey to you, and maybe you don't need to hear this, maybe you do, but here's the thing. It sounds so cheesy, but you're exactly where you need to be. You're exactly who you need to be, and people will follow you. The reason people follow Jeff and Troy, Peach, Bethany, the reason people follow them is because, yes, they know where they're going, and they have a very definite purpose, but they're just them. People will follow you too. I want to go back. When I was, for 23 years, I kept like, you know, I would never want to talk about adoption. Never want to talk about it. Remember having, in high school, I had a girlfriend, Suzanne, and she's like, don't you want to just find your birth? Do you ever think about her? And I like freaked out and I was like, no. I got so angry. And when I was in college, 23 years old, I saw a play. It was about adoption. I met a guy that actually found his birth mother, and he said it changed his life. I thought, He convinced me to seek her out. So, long story, a little bit shorter. I wound up seeking her out. I wound up I was born in Springfield, Massachusetts. I wound up contacting the Department of Social Services. And I wound up speaking to this lady, and I said, hi, I'm an adoptee. I'm looking for my birth mother. I'd like to see if I can get any of the records. And she goes, okay, tell me your name. Told her my name. And she goes back, and she goes, Lucy was gone for like 5 minutes. She comes back, and she goes, okay, I can hear her ruffling all these papers. She goes, okay, great, I've got your information right here. And I said, pardon me? She goes, I have a copy of your birth certificate. I have all your birth records, all the prenatal, everything. I said, really? Can you send it to me? And she said, absolutely. She goes, I will send you all the non-identifying information that I can. So what do you mean non-identifying? She goes, well, basically we can't give you anything that will tell you your real name or, you know, who your real parents are and all that. I said, okay. About several days later, I get in the mail, big, thick packet of information, and sure enough, there's a copy of my birth certificate. There's all this stuff. Birth records. I mean, I could see, you know, when my birth mother was 3 months pregnant, 6 months pregnant, all that stuff. But all the names were whited out, and it was a Xeroxed copy, so it was blacked out. Boy, did that upset me. But it was a prize. Okay? It was a prize. I wound up going and finding an agency that actually sought out birth parents and wound up, reuniting people, adoptees with their birth parents. And they wound up finding my birth mother, in 2 weeks. And I wound up getting her information. And they gave me a form letter. All I had to do was, like, you know, write my name, you know, I sent it to her. Her name was Anne, birth mother. Sent it to her. And it was like, you know, I'm going to, we met 23 years ago, whatever, but, you know, that kind of thing. You know, I'm going to be in the area around Christmas. It would be great to meet you. Meanwhile, I lived in L.A. and she lived in Springfield, Massachusetts, completely others. But I'm going to be in the area. And just so happens, didn't get a response. Sent her another letter with a picture. Didn't get a response. So I wound up calling. And I would like to call, just to call, was an exercise of just, I mean, I had to work myself up, shaking, just dialing, pushing the buttons, the numbers, shaking. Ring would ring and ring and ring and ring, and nobody answered. I did this so many times. Ring and ring and ring, nobody answered. I call, no answer, call, no answer, call, no answer. Then one day I called, and an answering machine picked up, and it's a man's voice, and it's very kind of like sing-song. It says, "Hello, we're not here right now. Please leave a message and we'll call you back." I was shocked. Didn't leave a message. Called again. Kept calling, kept calling. Wouldn't leave a message. Called, don't leave a message. Called, don't leave a message. Called, don't leave a message. One day I called and she answered the phone. She said, "Hello." So shocked, slammed the phone down. And I'm like freaking out. I'm like shaking. Wait a couple minutes. Call again. "Hello?" I said, "Hi. May I speak with Ann, please?" "Who's calling?" "It's Martin." Long pause. "Hi." "Hi. How you doing?" "Good. What can I do for you?" We talked for a couple minutes. I said, "Listen, I'm going to be in your area. I'm building a new market. Anyways, I'm going to be in the... There are similarities, I'm telling you. I'm going to be in your area. Love to meet around the holidays." She said, "No, can't do it. Don't want to do it. I'm not ready to meet, don't want to do it." Sent her another letter, asking her, never heard back. Christmas, I booked my ticket and I flew out there. I said, "You know what, I'm just going to go and knock on the door." And so I went out there and it was dead of winter, Springfield, Massachusetts, where she lived. She lived in a very not good part of town. Springfield, Massachusetts, at the time, at least when I was there, it was just nothing but a lot of really old factory buildings that were just abandoned by major companies, literally broken windows. It was weird. And she lived in an old schoolhouse because I had her address. And I drove and I went to the building at night, the night that I arrived, and I walked up to the building. And I walked in, it was an old schoolhouse that had been converted into an apartment building. And so the front door, you could walk up the steps and walk right into the front door. But then there was a glass security door, locked. So I went back to the hotel. The next day, I started calling. She wound up not seeing her then. But a guy, the day that I was going to leave, a guy answered the phone that I called. And he goes, "Who is this?" And I said, "It's Martin." And he goes, "Uh-huh, I know who you are. What do you want?" And I said, "I really want to meet Ann. I'm here in town. I just would like to meet her." And he goes, "Here's the thing. I know all about you, and I know the process that you've been through with this. And I go, I have to tell you, I have a lot of respect for the way you've been doing it. And I think that you have a right to some answers. I can tell you a couple things, but I can't tell you everything because Ann would be very upset with me. Why don't we meet?" I said, "Okay." And he goes, "But before we do, I need to tell you something." He goes, "I'm your father." Like, "Luke, I'm your father." "I want you to understand something. I wasn't searching for him. Honest to God, it had not really even crossed my mind. She was my goal. He was a prize along the way. I went and I met him at a train station, and man. When I met him, and I'm sitting in a car, it's raining. I'm sitting in a car, and it's an old beat up car. I'm sitting in the front seat, right across these train tracks. The train's coming in and going out, coming in and going out. And there's Sam, that's his name. We're just sitting there, and it's raining, and it's like, I don't know if you can hear this, but tapping on the wind on the roof of the car. And I'm sitting here, I'm going, God, this is my father. Wow. And we talked, and he goes, Ann doesn't want to meet you. It's not going to happen. You got to get on with your life. And so I did. For a few years, I kept trying to get on with things, and for some reason, there was this burning desire, some part of me, inside of me, is like, I gotta meet her. So I flew back several years later with the intention of knocking on the door, and I was literally in the middle of the day outside in the car, working up the nerve to go and knock on that door, and he walked out of the building. Sam did. And I got out, and he looked at me, and he goes, what the hell are you doing here? And I go, I want to meet her. And he goes, I told you, it's not going to happen. And we got into a little bit of an argument, and he was very upset with me. But we wound up spending the day together. We wound up having an unbelievable time. And I realized that I have the same mannerisms as he did. The same ones. Another prize. Wound up not meeting Ann then. Several years go by, and I hit a big wall in my life, and things were not going well. I was very self-destructive. And a friend of mine goes, you need to get a life coach. I wound up getting this life coach, had two sessions with her. In the first session, she said to me, after about 45 minutes of hearing my story, she goes, you have to meet her. You have to go and meet her. You will not be able to move on with your life until you go and do it. And so a couple weeks later, on my 33rd birthday, I went out there. I'm 34 right now, but 33rd birthday, I went out there, and I'm sitting in the car, it's pouring down rain, and it was September 26th, and I'm in the car, and it's pouring rain, and I'm sitting there, and I'm just so afraid, I've just wound up. The thoughts that were going through my head were insane. I couldn't move. A friend of mine called, Sabrina, and she goes, how's it going? Because I told her I was going to do it, and I'm like, I'm in my car. She goes, what do you mean? I'm in my car. I can't do it. And she goes, Martin, yes, you can. She goes, Martin, look, she goes, I love you, I believe in you, and you can do it. Just get out of the car, get out of the car, just get out of the car, and just walk, I'll stay on the phone with you. I'm going to open up the door, and I'm like, oh, and I get out of the car, rain's coming down, I'm walking on my phone, I'm walking to the thing, front door, and all I can think about is she's got to be able to see me, she's probably seeing me right now. And I'm walking through the rain, and Sabrina goes, you can do it, you can do it. And we go, okay, I'm going to go. Real quick, it's kind of like having a sponsor. It's kind of like what Jeff and Troy have done with Bethany. Same thing. We believe in you. So I'm walking out, walking to the front, walk up the steps, walk through the front door. There's that security door. Two times I'd walked up to it before, it was locked. So I'm figuring, okay, I look in the little thing on the little keypad on the left, figure I'm just going to start dialing somebody's number until somebody lets me in. I go, hey, pizza guy, I don't know, whatever, Landshark, whatever. And that's a reference a few of you will get. As honest as I'm standing here, I swear a voice just said, pull in the door. So, and the door just opened. I believe that when things are meant to be, they just happen. They just do. Walk straight, made a right turn, made a left turn, door number A, or, you know, apartment A. I just went up and I just knocked. A little voice behind the door says, "Who is it?" I said, "It's Martin." And she opened the door. This much, little security chain. And she little had her hair in curlers, and she goes, "Hi." And I said, "Hi." And she goes, "Do you want to talk?" I said, "I would love to." She opened the door. We spent 2 days together. I wrote some things down. I'm sorry I don't have them up on a PowerPoint, but I called them Lessons from Anne, because that, again, that was her name. I believe that it took 10 years to meet her because I had not become the person that I needed to be in order to meet her. And I want you to understand this. You hear it. Success is attracted by the person you become. That is true. Bethany Webster, Dave and Yvette. Oh, man. For 10 years, I wanted to meet her because I felt like something was wrong with me. I needed to get something from her. Finally, 10 years, I go and I meet her because I didn't need anything from her. I went because I had to prove something to myself. The goal was meeting her. Knocking on the door, really knocking on the door, her saying, "Who is it?" and me saying, "It's Martin." That was it right there. That was it. The rest was gravy. But I want to talk about all the prizes that came in between there. The dream, the struggle, and the prizes. This business, I don't think it's always easy. Some people make it look easy. For me, it hasn't been. But it is absolutely, without a doubt, worth it. And I have realized that I have had times, when I have worked on myself, and I've had times when I have not. And I've tried to work harder on my business than I have on myself. That doesn't work so well. Again, I just point Dave and Yvette, who I just have monumental respect for. Work harder on yourself. Bethany is right. Matt is right. It is the inner game. I swear on my life, it is the inner game. The last thing is this, is persistence. Calling, writing the letters, calling. It's persistence. Showing up several times. It's persistence. You can absolutely succeed with this. It doesn't happen overnight. Ah, that bothers me so much when people quit. And they start blaming. They blame you. They blame their downline. They blame people they don't know. They blame the company. Whatever. It's garbage. You didn't give it enough time. Give it time. And recognize all the gifts, all the prizes that happen along the way. Because quite frankly, maybe people are in this audience, maybe you don't want to make 50 grand a month. Maybe you're happy just making 500 a month. Maybe the gift is you just met some awesome people. Maybe the gift is you met your girlfriend. Buddy Buck is here. He met his wife doing this thing, Eve. She was a friend. He prospected her. And boy, did he prospect her, right? They're married now. Maybe the gift is the personal development. Maybe the gift is the social aspect. Maybe the gift is just believing one more time. Who knows? The gifts happen the moment you sign up. Recognize that and celebrate them along the way. And maybe, just maybe, the prizes don't necessarily match up to be the dream that you had, but it doesn't mean they're not worth it. Does that make sense? All right, I'm done. Thank you. I just want to thank you. Thank you. I just want to say I am beyond inspired by this whole thing. Beyond inspired. And I am blown away by today, and I am fired up, pumped up for tomorrow. Quick piece of advice, take it easy tonight. Take it easy tonight, seriously. Be here for tomorrow, because you're going to hear from some people, and you're going to hear stuff tomorrow that you're going to walk out of here just, you think you're fired up after today, just wait. So take it easy tonight, and let's have an awesome day tomorrow. God bless. Yeah.